What's good? Welcome back to Smell You Later, a podcast about scents. Is that it? Is that what we say?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what we do.
We talk enough on this podcast. We can just say a podcast about scents. God damn it.
A podcast about scents and fragrances and smells, which are synonymous, but also not.
Sable, I feel like it's been forever since I've seen you.
It's been 2 weeks. That's way too long.
I know.
That's like a quarantine period.
God, seriously. Truly. I'm just sending my pink apartment like, I miss her.
As if we text each other Kirby memes like every day.
Yeah, as if we're not consistently texting, DMing, and emailing at the same time all day. But truly. I mean, there's nothing like being in person.
You know, sometimes codependency just works.
Really, you've said it. I'm happy to be back. I'm happy to be with you. And I'm happy that you, our listener, have returned.
Welcome back.
Yes, welcome back. So glad you're here.
So Tynan, what do you smell like today?
I'm so excited because I feel like we might be wearing the same thing. I'm wearing Tom Ford Bitter Peach.
Ah, yes.
Ah!
Yes,
I knew it. I knew it.
Twinning.
Sisters. Yeah, so... Bitter Peach is the, you know what I mean when I say this. I'm going to say this wrong because I'm going to fucking drag me for it. It is the fourth installment in the new design convention of Tom Ford private label scents. By that, I mean he started this new situation of Lost Cherry. And then went to fucking Fabulous.
Mm. Rose Prick.
And now Bitter Peach. They're all a little bit more colorful with the component and I guess the scent as well. Lost Cherry was red. Fucking Fabulous was jet black. Rose Prick was a matte pink, which I die for. And Bitter Peach is orange. They're just a little bit more eye-popping than his already gorgeous collection. But I guess the way that it smells, which is why we're all here. It's cool. I really didn't know what to expect from this.
Same.
Lost Cherry, which I've talked about on here before, is really cool and really literal in a way that it smells like a really syrupy maraschino cherry with a little bit of cinnamon. It's really lovely. So I didn't know if this was going to smell like a gummy peach ring or what. And this is not as literal or as saccharine as Lost Cherry is, but it's really good.
I would dare say it doesn't really smell like a peach at all. Like, it's not, I was expecting fruity and tangy, and it's not.
I think it's tangy.
Yeah, okay. A little tangy.
And sharp. I think I stole that descriptor from you, to be honest. But I agree with you. It's not, I think it's sweet, but it's not sweet in the way that I was expecting. Mm-hmm. I don't have the notes pulled up, but I've already written about this, so I kind of have them memorized in a way.
It's juicy.
The top is peach as well as blood orange, and I think that in itself makes it make a little bit more sense where the really bright sharpness comes from, because a peach is so sweet and nectary, and an orange is more like zingy.
Yeah.
And you get sort of both, and that was what I was like not prepared for.
Yeah.
So that's at the top, and it's really, really fun. And then... This really does take you on a journey as you wear, as I know many do, but lately I've been wearing a lot of linear fragrances, so there's not been a lot of fun on the dry down. This one, it gets really spicy as you wear it, which I really like. And I think there's like a scent, this fragrance in particular, the base notes, it's like a greatest hits of every base note you've ever heard of. There's amber, there's musk, there's wood, like every
patchouli.
Wood, there's patchouli, there, like just like name a note and it's there.
Yeah.
But you get a big spicy moment and then you get some nice woods to anchor it. I really like it. I hesitate to say it's like a spiced peach because that takes me to holiday and it's not that either. It's just a really like, it's
sexy and edgy, I would say.
Do you think?
It's a little... It's more edgy than sexy, I think, just because sexy is a subjective term.
Yeah. But I think it also doesn't try super hard.
It doesn't.
Which I think sexy fragrances do, which I love, but...
But it's brash. It's like...
It is.
Right when it comes out, it's very juicy. Like, I liken it to when you're like eating a really ripe piece of tropical fruit and like squirts when you bite into it.
Not
<It's> like,
squirts.
You know. But it's, it has that like... super sweet ripe juiciness to it, and then when it dries down, like that is the fun part for sure. I don't think I read that it has any of this in it, but I get kind of an almondy dry down. It's almost like a peach Bellini with an amaretto,
because there's a really boozy aspect
very,
of it too.
It's a boozy peach,
rum and cognac in it in the middle too.
Oh, that's probably where I get the almond from.
Yeah, for sure. And I usually don't like rum notes. I just find them, as much as I love booze. I find rum notes to be just a little syrupy.
That, yeah,
to me, they just they go like be. Too far left in that yeah. way. And this one doesn't. It's really nice.
No, it stays sharp.
Yeah. I was really interested to see what Tom Ford would do like with a peach, really, and conceptually. And I think this is not always what I was expecting, but it's really fun. I love wearing it. I want to smell it on someone else too. And
I love wearing it.
I think it's sort of like, it's going to be really nice in the fall and winter, but I think it could do really well all year round.
I think so.
You know?
Yeah. I don't see this as being like a seasonal scent so much as I see it almost being like an occasional scent.
Okay.
Because it is, to me, very, it's got personality, you know?
You know when Call Me By Your Name. You know when Call Me By Your Name when Elio fucks the peach and then the other guy eats it?
Oh my God.
It's like, it's like that.
It's the fuck peach.
It's the fuck peach.
Yep. That's bitter peach.
It just came to me. No, it's lovely. I want,
you know, this. What? Judging by like all of the graphics, the promotional campaign images on Tom Ford's Instagram for this, it's 100% the fuck peach.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Oh, God.
He knew what he was doing.
He knew what he was doing. And also the fragrance that came before this was the same fucking fabulous. Like,
yeah.
Which I'm sorry. Like, I could never wear that by name alone. Not because it like scandalizes me in any way. It does not. I have a bad enough mouth anyway. I don't need to, you know, like, my fragrance is called fucking fabulous. Okay, cool.
Have I actually gifted that candle to Kara and Sam on their wedding.
Oh, well, in that case, I love it.
Whoops. I don't actually know what it smells like.
I think that's the thing. I think people really like it. I've heard really yeah. good things about it, but I actually don't think anyone knows what it smells like because people yeah. just like the name so much, which, okay, yeah. fine. It's fun. Like
names are important. Names like make or break a scent. Yeah.
yeah. Yeah.
I totally believe that people would like a fragrance based on the name.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Have you ever bought a scent based on something other than the way it smells, having not smelled it before?
No.
I have.
Really? What? Yeah.
Marc Jacobs Bang.
Oh.
Yeah. It was also like somehow like the day it came out in like, oh my God, 2010. Yeah. I knew somehow when it was coming out, and I was in Chicago and I picked it up, and that thing is just straight pepper. It's like pepper and metal, and it smells. Wow. Just reminds me of just like the worst time in my life. But I think I really liked the bottle. And you know what it was? Actually, it was the second fragrance he did after his flagship mm-hmm. fragrance for men and women. And I obsessed with his OG men's fragrance. So I was yeah. like, I'm going to love
this.
So you
already knew.
I already knew. Okay. And yeah, it was it's like the biggest 180 that mm-hmm. you can possibly be from the original. But yeah, so I guess I have bought something.
I feel like I would buy like the Comme des Garçons scents because I love mm-hmm. all of their scents. And they do such like a quirky take on whatever the name is, like mm-hmm. Wonderwood or Wonderwood. They have like concrete, copper. So they do that like conceptual elements kind of thing that I'm into.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I actually think Man 2 is my favorite scent from them. I don't think I've ever smelled Man 1 or like just Man. Yep, but
I smell Man.
Yeah. Anyway.
Anyway.
I guess since we're both wearing the same fragrance and talked about it, that's that.
That was that.
Well, now we get to get into our guests for today. So on the show, we have Matthew Mellon and Andrew Goetz, otherwise known as Mellon and Goetz.
Hey.
Perhaps you've seen their products in your financier boyfriend's shower in his West Side. They're fancy.
They're fancy.
You know what? I did see the products in a fancy Soho loft apartment once. So I was like, all right, checks out.
Yeah.
They're like
They're fancy.
They're fancy. But not like not impossible fancy, but like it's like a flex. When I see Mellon and Goetz products in someone's shower, I'm like, oh, that's a flex.
You know what it is? To me, it's the fact that they have a like aspiring luxury price point. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't call them expensive, but mm-hmm. they're not drugstore.
Sure.
They're a Sephora price point.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But they're not, unless I'm wrong, available at Sephora. No. I guess my point is like you have to be shopping at a place that sells some bougie yes. shit to just like throw them in your yes. cart. You know what I mean? Unless you're shopping there, which is, you know,
it's a lifestyle flex.
It's a lifestyle flex for sure. It's yeah. like, oh, I was, you know, at Barney's and just happened to buy a new face wash, whatever. Yeah. RIP Barney's.
Like you think about this, like body products, like it's important to you.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, they're a New York City brand. They're about 15, 16 years old and no one's ever walked into my bathroom.
my personal experience with Maison Niguet's is longstanding. I haven't used a ton of their collection, but I do love their fine fragrances. Mm-hmm. I am partial to cannabis, the scent, and I also like dark rum quite a bit.
That's the classic. I love that. Yeah, everybody loves that.
Everyone loves
that. That's like rum. The one fragrance where it's like, you could share it as a couple.
And I know that, yeah. I just said that I hate rum fragrances, but I really like theirs. And I'm theirs, not just saying, yeah. that because I'm on the show.
Theirs is like the benchmark.
Totally. For rum. Because it's not sticky and syrupy. You know what I mean? It's actually just wearable and nice. Exactly.
Yeah. I remember maybe sometime last year going to the event for a fragrance launch called STEM. And it was really cute. It was in their Chelsea store. And it was like a flower arranging event. Mm. And I took home the scent. Obviously, they, you know, give you a little swag bag. And I realized it smells strikingly like...
Don't say it.
It smells a lot like Glossier You.
I think it's... A lot. I genuinely... I
think it's fresher.
I feel certain ways about Glossier You.
I know.
You can probably guess what they are. I prefer this. I much prefer this Glossier You. But the thing is, a lot of people like Glossier You.
Tons.
Which is great for them.
It's a good scent.
So
it's
but
it's good.
Yeah. I would say if you like this, then you will love this. I think there are more interesting things happening. What's it called?
STEM.
Stock? Oh, STEM.
Stock.
I think there are more interesting things happening.
It's more nuanced.
In stock,
for sure.
I think it's a little, like you said, a little bit fresher.
Yeah.
I would much rather reach for this than Glossier You, no shade.
Yes. It's the grown-up version of Glossier You.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what I would wager. But it's lovely. And yeah.
Let's do it.
Without further ado, Malin and Getz.
So Matthew is the doyen of the beauty industry, and I come from the design world. And I was always fascinated when I would visit Matthew at his, he'd been working at Kiehl's. And I was really very much the minimalist. I literally used a bar of Neutrogena to wash my face, body, hair, and to shave with. When I met Matthew, he started to introduce me to the whole world of skincare, and I did realize that you use a better product, get a result. But Kiehl's was really baroque. It was like so intimidating and overwhelming, and there was like 50 million products. It was insane. And so from an aesthetic and design point
of view, Kiehl's.
It's always Kiehl's. It's always
overwhelming. And so the idea always stuck in my head, like, wow, it would be great if somebody just like gave this a like really modern shower and just got rid of all the excess. And so that's sort of what the whole theme of Malin & Getz was.
Yeah, but the genesis was really about, so before I had worked for Kiehl's, I had worked for Barney's as a beauty buyer when it was a privately owned and operated business. And we launched brands like Kiehl's and Stila and NARS and Philosophy, Fresh, Bliss, these independent niche luxury businesses that didn't exist in the marketplace at the time. So they got their start at Barney's. And years later, I took a job at Kiehl's. I worked for Kiehl's for 6 years. Kiehl's was eventually sold off to L'Oreal. And it was at that moment that Andrew, who had been working for about 10 years at that point with a family-owned and operated company, Vitra, out of Basel, Switzerland, that he turned to me and said, well, Kiehl's has been sold to L'Oreal. NARS has been sold to Shiseido. Bliss has been sold to LVMH. All these little important niche luxury businesses are being sold off to big corporations. There's this opportunity for someone to step in and do something authentic and real. Mm-hmm. And
modern and contemporary.
And we could pick up where they've left off. Let's do it. You know, there's still opportunity. Let's put our mark. And it was kind of a now or never moment of timing, age, relationship, experiences between design and beauty to sort of launch Malin & Getz.
Wow, that sounds like you really had your target on like that one niche white space and finally just opened up to you.
Yeah, well, it opened up and we were in agreement to do it. It had been open and it stayed open. And I was just, you know, I come from a family of you know, company people. Like my dad worked for the same company for his entire career. Whereas Andrew comes from a family of entrepreneurs, his mom, his dad, his stepmother, his stepfather, his sisters, you know, so there's just this long line of like taking risk in his family. Whereas my family was always, you know, very conservative. So it took me some time to get to the point where I could do it. But once I did, you know, I feel like we were all in. And now, 16 years later, I can't imagine not having done it.
Was there one thing that sort of pushed you over the edge on top of like the stars aligning and just saying, okay, wait, this is right. This is the time.
Well, we were at an age where I think we both turned to each other and said, you know, is it a now or never moment where if we don't do it now, we'll never do it because we're just going to become too comfortable with salaries and working for companies and just getting old enough where maybe it's specifically, I'm speaking more for myself where I didn't know. I was 35 or around 35 at the time. And I kept thinking, you know, if I'm much older, would I even be willing to take the risk at all at that point?
So you start a body care and skincare line, but it really seems like fragrance is the central part of the collection. Was that an intentional move to kind of make the fragrances the draw, or was that sort of a byproduct of what you were creating overall?
I would say fragrances are a complementary part of the brand. Most of our scents that were put in our products were put in there for an efficacious reason because they actually did something. So chamomile, for instance, in our vitamin E face moisturizer is very soothing and calming for the skin. Happens to smell really great as well.
Well, maybe we should define what they mean by fragrance or what we're scent. All talking
yeah,
about.
I
what
guess
we mean. Because we have five categories of business: face products or skincare, body, hair, fragrances or eau de parfum, so a body spray of perfume, and then candles. So candles and fragrances or eau de parfums fall into the category of perfume or fragrance for us. The other three categories are skincare oriented and are mostly naturally scented products, which the scent or the aroma, the experience of the olfactory experience is generally coming from something that is therapeutic and is in the product in the first place as part of a therapy.
But we knew people love an olfactory experience. And so one way of creating, whether it's a eau de parfum or a candle, is that we're celebrating that olfactory experience, but we're not forcing people to use an artificial fragrance in skincare. So they do complement each other as opposed to being ancillary. And it's a way for us to tell our story and say, hey, you know, we don't use artificial fragrance or parfums in our skincare, but we do have this, we know people love it, and here's your choice to use it in your home or on your body, as opposed to being forced to use it in skincare.
I know that rum is your best-selling scent, and I know that you also have a cannabis fragrance. You have fragrances inspired by people's like vices, or what are vices to many people?
Indulgences.
Exactly.
Perhaps.
You know, cannabis and rum are both very like sexy scent ideas. Yeah. And was that intentional? How do you land on a concept like that?
Yeah, I mean, again, it's sort of born out of long stories that are not romantic to the fragrance industry. They were intentional. They were marketing ideas, obviously. Rum is our single best-selling eau de parfum. Cannabis is our single best-selling candle. It's highly successful, very successful for us as well. And cannabis is just easier to talk about because it is a little bit more romanticized. First of all, it is an apothecary ingredient. Cannabis has been used for a variety of mood-altering benefits for many years. Andrew had lived in Amsterdam for 5 or 6 years right out of college, and he was experiencing it firsthand. And it was just sort of one of those easy, fun things that we were looking to accomplish. We'd created a fragrance. It was rich and dark and smoky and green and chocolatey and all the things that we were like, what is this like? And we were like, it's kind of like pot. And Andrew was like, oh, well, cannabis. And then there was this whole story about, well, he had lived in Amsterdam and, you know, all this stuff. And then it had these links back to apothecary or chemistry. So it just all fell into place.
Yeah. You know, fragrance is really about memory and how it jolts your memory and brings you to a place. And so when we were developing this, many of our fragrance started with like an apothecary concept, but when this one was developed, it was like, oh, wow, it smells sort of weirdly spicy, like you're riding a bicycle past a coffee shop in Amsterdam. And, you know, then it just became this romantic story.
I know you said that your eucalyptus deodorant was the most popular product, but what do you think is the most popular scent? And why do you think that is?
Yeah, it would be rum or cannabis for sure. Those would be the things that people would say that they know the brand for.
I feel like that's probably because dark rum is so unique to you guys. A lot of, you know, fragrance lines or scented product lines have a bergamot or they have a mint something, but like you're the only ones I can really think of that have a rum.
Well, good. That's great.
Yeah.
We were trying to create a combination of peppermint and lime. It was meant to be a natural combination. And the perfumer came up with a synthetic version of that, which is our mojito candle today. And then its complement was dark rum, which we had created out of the idea of when you layer dark rum with peppermint and lime, it becomes a mojito. And dark rum, the mojito as a fragrance could never have worked. I mean, we actually sprayed it on ourselves and we were walking around and we smoked it basically. And no one thought that that was cool, by the way. But all of a sudden, like, I remember the first time we smelled what the perfumer had done in terms of the rum, and Andrew just immediately was like, oh my God, this is a winner. And lo and behold, here we are all these years later, and it's a total winner.
I like when things come like sort of organically out of like little romantic moments or, you know.
And they just like troubleshoot their way to working.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty great. I mean, we, you know, dark rum was really one of our very first fragrances ever. And we did not expect what we got from it. And similarly, eucalyptus deodorant. I mean, we were in development of our eucalyptus deodorant for 4 years. And wow. We gotten to the point where we were just like almost ready to give up. And we finally got this version and we were like, okay, we're going to put it out there. And honestly, we really weren't sure what to expect. And the fact that it had within a year had become our best-selling product and has remained the best-selling product all these years later. Rum is a similar story. I mean, it kind of took us by surprise and people know us for that.
I think as far as fragrance goes in your collection, as a consumer, I've always sort of, and this may speak to me more as being a fragrance person, but I've seen the collection was more like fragrance first, because in my experience, when people talk about a Melanie Goetz product, it's always, oh, I love the, you know, the rum body wash or the eucalyptus deodorant or whatever. And because your collection is so straightforward with the categories, do you see the fragrance creating even more of a connection to the consumer? Because when I think Melanie Goetz, I think fragrance, and then, you know, if it's a body wash or a hand soap or this or that.
Well, so what you've already suggested is two products, and both of them are great, by the way. And we're always excited to hear that somebody likes anything that we do. So this is awesome. But the eucalyptus deodorant is in fact a naturally scented product, and eucalyptus,
okay,
again, a therapy in this particular product, whereas the rum body wash, for instance, is synthetically perfumed and it is part of our perfume range. In either case, it's great that people are finding these products and that they know them because of the name of a scent that's associated with them. And I can let Andrew talk about this a little bit further because he really manages this piece of the business. We have a tremendous, or we did have a tremendous pre-COVID amenity program that we participate with, and rum, it was the catalyst to all of that. So it's a probably a 15-year-old fragrance for us.
It was one of the first fragrances we developed.
And probably about 14 or 13 years in hotels, which now spans the globe, you know, in probably close to 1,000 different locations, which people stay in and then they discover it. But yes, association with fragrance through our amenity programs has become a great word of mouth for our brand. And in some ways, many people probably do know us because of that, because they are traveling on Delta Airlines, where we do have done the amenity program in various ways for over 10 years, have stayed in a hotel, have worked out in a gym with rum, basically, because rum is it is our single best-selling scent. It is a franchise now with probably, I don't know, maybe 8 or 9 SKUs associated with it, and is it almost its own little department in and of itself. It does so well for us.
I think what we're talking about is really the power of fragrance and what it does for you. You know, it jolts your mind and memory and brings you on a journey. You know, it's Proustian, quote unquote. So I think what you're talking about, us being associated with a fragrance, just shows you how powerful scent can be.
Do you find that the hotel amenities are a big point of entry for a lot of your new consumers?
Yes. It's, you know, it's amazing exposure. I don't think that we were incredibly brilliant in thinking like, oh, we should go after the hotel market because it's going to be free marketing. The hotel sort of came to us and we scrambled to put an amenity program together. And then after we did that, we realized, wow, this is an incredible opportunity. So I think the opportunity was to discover we had an opportunity when opportunity knocked.
But it is interesting because, as I mentioned, we have success in every category within the top 10 best-selling products in the range. And we find people discover the brand in so many different ways because it is somewhat, you know, first of all, it's a unisex business. So we have always addressed men and women equally. And in fact, 50% of our business comes from both. So, and we've actually done studies and we've always said this, but we actually did the studies a couple of years ago. And we actually found that it was 50-50, but it's pretty nuanced in terms of design and architecture and beauty and ingredient stories. And, you know, Andrew's a cook, so originally we were doing food-oriented stories where we'd invite beauty editors to come to our store and have dinner with us. And so there's all been a lot of press around our brand and opportunities for entry into the brand in so many different ways. Our eucalyptus deodorant, for instance, is our single best-selling product out of anything that we make in the entire range. So wow. We get people who just buy deodorant. We've had this deodorant now for almost 12 years. We were, you know, one of the first natural deodorants in the marketplace at luxury. And so we really had a long time to establish sort of a credibility or an authority for a natural deodorant. And we just find people discover us and try our deodorant because it's $20 and it's easy and why not? You know, so that's a point of entry. Candles in particular are an easy point of entry. If you stayed in a hotel and you love our peppermint shampoo, you can buy that on Amazon really fast, really easily. You know, so there's lots of different ways people discover and or enter the brand.
Nice. That's like so genius to have your stuff in hotels. And
yeah,
you know, because I always steal that shit from hotels. And then, you know, then
I go harder now because everyone's going to a dispenser format for environment.
Oh, right.
Which is actually a really good thing for the environment. So we're actually happy about it. Not a great thing for stealing product unless you travel with your toolkit.
Which I do. I'll just bring steal a the Tupperware. Dispenser. So Sable and I know that when it comes to fragrance and skincare, there's definitely a difference between a synthetic fragrance that has been added and, you know, maybe a natural oil or whatever, a fragrance that has entered the product through an actual ingredient.
Yes.
But we know that by and large, fragrance and skincare is not exactly lauded at this point in time. A lot of people look down upon it just baseline without really having the knowledge of, you know, not all fragrance is bad. You might have reactive skin, but fragrance in skincare baseline is not bad, whether it's synthetic or natural. Do you find that that is a barrier for some consumers? And how do you sort of reconcile that?
Probably not as many as what anyone would think. There's a demand at luxury for a product that looks good, that feels good, that smells good, and that performs. And we have to be able to deliver on all those things. So I think people are buying for this overall experience of what a luxury product is going to deliver. If you're spending $20 on a deodorant or $35 on a face wash, it better work, it better smell good, it better feel good, it better make you feel like you've just spent the money that you have. And so all this stuff does matter. In terms of synthetic versus natural, I think there is a consumer out there, especially at luxury, who's looking for a more natural-based product, but it doesn't necessarily have to come in the form of the therapy and the scent itself being natural. It might be a bonus if it is, but if it's synthetically scented and it smells beautiful, maybe that's okay. In some cases, like with our eucalyptus deodorant, for instance, eucalyptus is fighting odor in and of itself. It's known to be a natural antibacterial. So it does both. But to answer your question, I don't think the majority of people care that it is synthetic or natural as long as they're not having an adverse reaction and it smells really beautiful.
I see
that makes sense.
Yeah, definitely.
I can see that.
How have your consumers responded to you not gendering your scents and, I guess by extension, not gendering your collection as a whole?
I think it's been, you know, I think that's been our mantra and with our consumer. They love that. I mean, you know, the joke was when we first started the brand and we were working out of the store, women would come in and say like, oh, I stole this from my boyfriend and vice versa. The guys would come in like, I stole this from my girlfriend and now I'm replenishing because she's going to kill me if I don't. So it's worked really, really well. And it made, maybe we were naive at the time, but we just thought like, why would we ostracize 50% of the population, whether it be women or men, depending on what we were going to create. We just liked that it was so democratic. And quite frankly, while there are nuances and differences between a woman's skin and a man's skin, they're really, really incredibly subtle. And so, you know, I always say that when you go to a restaurant, you don't order a woman's steak or a man's steak, you order a steak. And your skin
that is very true.
Organ. So it's not entirely different than your internal organs. So why would you need to have a special skincare just because of your gender?
But we have been very specific about having the sense of our products be very genderless or gender neutral. So that is very overt on our part. We've intended it to be that way. And 16 years ago, that was a real, I mean, even today somewhat, it's a real point of difference. You know, we really stood out, especially 16 years ago, as being sort of this unisex or genderless brand. And the scents are very specific to that. So it's very much in keeping with the business model from start to finish with everything that we do, that you should be able to share this product or use it depending on, you know, it doesn't matter who you are, that it should work and it should smell good and perform. And
that makes a lot of sense.
So when you created your brand in mind to be genderless and for everybody, who did you have in mind as the Melanin Guts customer? Like, who's the kind of person who you anticipated making products for?
You know, we were really producing for ourselves and for the customer that we knew and we grew up with and that we had experience with. So it was really 25 to 35, you know, our own age group at the time, somebody who was younger, probably affluent because we were producing a luxury product. And well, what we're doing is the low end of luxury and certainly aspirational in some ways. It is affordable. It is accessible.
I think our customer really was us and our friends and family and our peers. And so it was somebody who was urban. That was really, we definitely spoke to an urban customer who really cared about design and really cared about quality and that things did what they said they did. And also someone who really just really dug that everything was so minimal and easy in orientation. So I think that appealed to a lot of people, again, in an urban environment who don't necessarily have big, large suburban bathrooms.
You know, we were a couple and we were living together in a small New York City apartment with a small New York City bathroom. And we both come from fashion and design worlds and wanted products that looked good and sat out on our shelves so that we didn't have to be embarrassed by them.
Yeah, and, but highbrow, of course.
Of course.
And so all of this sort of played a role, as Andrew said, in terms of it being urban, but also for how a couple could shop for and use products together. I mean, if you live in a small New York City apartment with a small bathroom and you're a couple, wouldn't it be great if you could share these products and limit how much space they actually take up and have them be an accessory that sits out and looks great?
Oh, so products for cohabitation. Very chic.
Yeah.
I like that.
I hate that. No one's using my shit.
Yeah. So kind of going off of that, I grew up in New York and Melanin Guts is, in my eyes, a very New York City brand. But as you said, hotels are one of the biggest entry points to the rest of the world, I suppose. Do you think you'd have any plans to extend the brand to be more international facing? Or do you ever get demands from global markets, like saying like, hey, can you create a scent for like the Asian market or like the Middle East or something like that?
We get those requests all too often. And we very diplomatically say, sure, we can. But we then talk them out of it because it gets complicated. And also, you know, it's always interesting. They love the brand. I'm really interested. I want to change it. So we sort of go through that whole song and dance. Like, well, if you really, really love the brand, here's the brand. And we're not really interested in creating another brand.
We like to ask a lot of our guests if there have been scents throughout their lives that have played a large role in their lives and maybe then worked their way into the products that brand owners create. They can be either fine fragrances or they can be just normal everyday scents that you run into just being a human being on earth. Are there any that stick out to you?
Yes. I'm going to go first.
So great.
When I was in college, there was this friend of mine, Verna Shook, and she always wore this really inexpensive Egyptian musk. And I just mm-hmm. loved everything about it, on her, how it smelled. And I actually just, I was Instagramming with her maybe about 6 months ago. And I was like, do you still wear Egyptian musk? And I haven't seen her in like years. And she was like, I do like every day. And it just smelled amazing on her. And then Andrea and I moved in together. This would have been back in 1993 or 94 in a rental apartment in the East Village. And at the corner of the block from where our apartment was one of those like essential oil vendors on the street corner. And I would buy Egyptian musk from him. And then fast forward to us having developed our business, when the perfumer asked us to pitch to the perfumers in the company, our brand, and we did so. One of the very first fragrances we created was this really elevated, sophisticated idea of Egyptian musk, which was called Lotus Root. It was our worst selling product ever.
Oh no.
It doesn't exist anymore, except that I still have a few pieces of it and I continue to wear Egyptian musk today.
I love that.
It's always those ones, like I always love those scents that are like the worst performing ones, but yeah. to me that they're the most interesting.
Totally.
I mean, and you know, it did have a real cult following. Like Lenny Kravitz loved it and was asking like where he could buy it when it was being discontinued. And you know, so there was like a real following of people who love this scent and were dedicated to it. But yeah, it just
except you could count them on one hand.
right.
And I happen to be one of them.
Really passionate group of people, all five of them. So here you go. And that's actually sort of the fun thing. So I think when we create scents, you know, sometimes we hit a home run and sometimes we don't, but the thing that we always do is we create scents that we love. And for various reasons, some people love them as well, and sometimes they don't. The challenge with that scent was that it wasn't very strong. It didn't smell. So it was very difficult to charge someone
It really was a second skin, which is also what made it very appealing. It was really sexy and soft. And it was the kind of scent that really your partner would smell on you. And that's what made it kind of special on top of everything else. Was just this very intimate scent that you or somebody very close to you would notice, and that was it. Whereas most people today, you know, they want a scent more like dark rum, which you smell. You know, it's apparent, it's around, and it sort of like projects who you are or what you're trying to suggest. And I like to smell scent too, so I'm not knocking it. Probably one of our favorite scents in our entire range, perfumes in our entire range, is a fragrance that we've created called Vetiver, which is, you know, our take on the old staple, but it's this really beautiful, gender neutral, very green, woody scent.
Smoky.
It's soft enough that it doesn't overwhelm, but it's strong enough that it's always apparent. And it tends to be more subtle for, I would say, real fragrance aficionados, but we both love it.
Vetiver is one of those. I feel like there's people at a certain tier of fragrance lovers where they just hunt for vetiver.
Yeah.
But then if you're not really into fragrance, you're like, what's that?
It's a very special scent. It's definitely not for everyone, but I think if you are a fragrance aficionado, you appreciate it.
Yeah. You got to get on vetiver's level.
Yeah. Right. But, you know, I think that's the amazing thing about scents. There's never a right or wrong. You know, it's all very subjective and can be very personal. But if you love something, you should wear it. And it brings you joy.
It's funny. You said people didn't love your take on Egyptian musk what was it called?
Lotus root.
Lotus root. Because it was so close to you and like a skin scent. But I feel like people are really going crazy about skin scents, like now more than ever.
Maybe you should relaunch it.
Yeah, just do a limited run. Just do a drop and see what happens.
You know, we've tried the source of where the musk was coming from is no longer available. And we haven't been able to replicate it in the same manner. And all of our tries they've come up with failure. So we kind of sort of gave up on it. However, last year we ended up launching a scent called Stem.
I know that one.
Yeah. And it's not Egyptian musk, of course, but it has some similarities for me personally that I happen to really like. And I can tell you about it really quickly. Several years ago, but 12 years ago now, we had purchased a house in the Hudson Valley near Hudson, New York, and we have a garden and we've become pretty avid gardeners. And we had come up with this idea that we really love the idea of what our hands smelled like at the end of a long day of gardening, just the residue that's left on your hands from pulling weeds or pruning things. And it's that green sort of sappy residue on your hand. And so that's what STEM is. It's this idea of this green residue that's left on your hands from a day of gardening. And its base happens to be all these notes of flowers' green parts. So if you have like gardenia, for instance, but you just take the stem of the gardenia and you crush it, then you mix it with other sort of leaves and things like that. This is what stem has become. But the base of stem, which most people don't know, is a floral musk. And it lingers really softly and for a long period of time in a similar manner to Egyptian musk. And it is, once it dries down and all the green sort of heavier, sharper floral notes move away, which I happen to love all those, by the way, it becomes this very soft floral musk on your skin. And it is that. It is this sort of skin scent that just is barely there for somebody intimate to smell on you. So I kind of got a little of that in this particular scent.
I have to smell that. That sounds great.
Yeah. We can smell that for this. I still have one.
Yes. Perfect.
Yeah, I will agree with you. It is a lovely musky floral. Like equal parts musk and floral. I feel like sometimes with those types of fragrances, it's either more floral than musk or more musky than floral, but this is a really good balance.
Well, thank you. I'm a fan of rose in particular, out of all florals, of which this it does have some rose components to it, but not much. It's more other things and musk. And for a long time, I wanted to create a rose musk. And I couldn't get it right. Not in a green way. I wanted it to be gender neutral. I wanted a man to try to wear this particular product as well as a woman. And I couldn't get the musk rose aspect of it green enough where that happened. Whereas I could do it with other things. We could do it with other things. And I think STEM is, for me, you know, what would be the most gender neutral of an idea of flowers that don't smell like a flower.
Ah, that's brilliant.
Yeah, that's great.
A gender neutral flower.
We love it.
We love it.
That's actually so fascinating to me to go back to their amenities program, because I have seen their products in so many mm-hmm. hotels, but I never thought about, you know, how they got there.
Yeah.
Or, you know, that's just something I never considered.
I think now that hotels, there's more competition mm-hmm. and there's all these boutique conceptual hotels. Totally. They really level up. They think of like every part of the experience you could have there. And of course, one of them, because, you know, hotels always have a reputation for having like shitty, horrible shampoos yeah. and soaps.
Right,
so
right, right.
If they can have fancy ones, then that'll give people a reason to return.
Yeah. That boutique hotel in Chicago that I told you about, the Roby, mm-hmm. has Le Labo in their bathrooms.
In tiny bottles or yeah. dispenser?
No, I believe in tiny bottles, which of course I copped an attitude about. But to sweeten the deal, they have a Le Labo in, like, not in the hotel, but it's essentially
it's
in
like
the hotel.
Attached
you like
to the building.
You like walk out yeah. one door and walk into Le Labo. So it's
of
like,
course.
Of course. Of right. But course. Also, like, hello. Genius.
Like, how could you not pair? Like, that's such a perfect pairing, strategic move.
Totally.
Yeah. I always get really amped to see what amenities are in hotels.
Yeah. Well, because also, like, when you put any sort of, I don't even say like luxury fragrance, but any sort of, you know, specialized fragrance into the, you know, bathroom in a hotel, that's what you're going to smell like. That smell is going to remind you of whatever trip mm-hmm. you're on, you know, be it good or bad, hopefully good.
Yeah.
And that's all part of it. Cause as I said, scent is tied to memory.
Totally. You
know, I have a 100% vacation fragrance that I only wear on vacation.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
Yeah, I know.
So what is it?
There you have it. It's Beyond Paradise by Estee Lauder for men.
Ooh. Is it in like a travel vial?
No. It's, like it's huge.
Willy-nilly glass brick.
Yeah. I think the book Perfume by Luca Turin named it the best men's fragrance of all time.
What?
Which
on
is,
what grounds?
Which is so funny because when you smell it, you are like, this is for men? Which, hello, I love. Nothing should be gendered, etc. But it's really sweet and aquatic and beachy. But pretty feminine, you know,
Beyond
hold
bad.
For shock. I mean, all that to say that fragrance can really take you back to even the quickest trip. So putting scents like that in hotels makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Sense. God.
I always just bring whatever like perfume vials, like the samples on vacation.
You know, as long as they're 3.4 ounces or under, which
I thought it was 3 ounces was the limit.
No, it's 3.4. Oh. And fragrances, the biggest bottle is always 3.4 ounces. Yeah. So you can travel with it. Not that you want to bring your gigantic glass bottle of scent.
I would still be afraid of TSA. Some TSA person just being like, nope, you can't. I have to take it now.
Yeah, exactly. Then I'll drive.
I'm driving. Cancel my flight. That was our episode with Melanie Goetz. I hope you enjoyed it. I learned a lot. I love learning more about brands that I'm visually familiar with, but don't entirely know like the bones of.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I love hearing the reason for being for their hero products or some of their longer lasting products that may not have come to fruition if something else hadn't crashed and burned. You know what I mean? I think that's all. We're getting the real inside scoop here, Sable.
Yeah.
Which is just for us, but I hope the listeners like it too. So we're all benefiting here.
I want to know what couple cohabitates and only has like Melanie Goetz products in their bathroom.
I mean, probably more than you would think, don't you think?
All those like model and fashion photographer couples.
Right, right. Exactly. People with perfect skin that don't really need to worry about anything.
Exactly. I want that life. Anyway. Same.
We hope you enjoyed. Follow us on Instagram, smileylater.mp3.
Yep.
Leave us 5 stars and a review.
Would love it if you did. Feel neutral if you don't.
I've never felt neutral about anything. Anyways, we have some really exciting things coming up. So keep listening. Smell you later.
Smell you later.